Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
It's hard to return a monkey these days.
I'm going to have to do some more research on this to see exactly what these zombie raccoons are doing.
What good was the snow guy?
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Y'all don't understand. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans.
You're Macaulay Culkin, and you're just running around your house.
Don't tweet me if you drink the strawby. No strawby.
Zardoz.
Well, speaking of garbage, it's a Nasty Cast. All right, welcome to episode 155 of the Nasty Cast. Everyone, I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. And it's the triumphant return of Van Lee. Welcome back, Van.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Would you like me to tell the story about what actually happened with all the gory details?
Yes, after we bring in Ron Rigney. What up, Ron?
Hello. I love gory details. Continue.
I mean, do you guys really want to hear this? Because I'll do it.
I don't think you will.
Okay.
I don't think you'll do it.
I will. It's nasty. Okay, so
it is a nasty cast, baby.
There you go. I cracked a tooth many years ago on the left side of my face in the back. I don't know what they're called, molars or whatever teeth doctors call them or whatever, bone. But anyway, cracked it a while back. Not a big deal. It hurt when it happened, but I never really had pain from it. Well,
how did you crack it?
I banged my head on something. I genuinely don't remember. It was probably playing softball, and I dove for a ball, or something happened. I got hit with whatever. I genuinely do not remember, but I know it was a physical just whack incident. So that happens. Not a big deal. I've never really had any trouble with it. Now, I'm also in Missouri and have degrees in journalism and political science, which means I don't have money or a job that has insurance. So I've never really, I go do my cleanings, but that's the extent of it. I mean, I don't have the money or the means to go do what's necessary. So I've just lived with it. Well, anyway, something happened and I got an infection in the tooth area. But the problem was is it spread and it became one of the worst infections I've ever had, experienced, seen, heard of in my life. And my whole face swelled up. And here's the problem is it hit every single nerve and every single tooth and that side of my face. Also went up into my eye, like I could feel it in my eye socket, the pain of, you know, just the pressure of my face expanding down to my throat. And it was just to the point that it was agonizing. But the problem was, is a lot of the infection itself was coming out of the tooth. So it was also disgusting to taste. But so not only agonizing, it was just gross. So what I ended up having to do was go to the quick fix dentist or whatever and just like, hey, let's get the tooth out and get me some antibiotics to fix the infection. But they tried. So they shot me with the antibiotics and said, let's come in tomorrow and do it because you're too swollen. Didn't work. I was still too swollen. It took like three or four times of doing this before my face shrunk enough that they could take the tooth out. Now the tooth's out. I still have some going on in my face, but it's not quite as bad, and I'm on the mend. But it's been a bloody nightmare ever since. And I, for about a week and a half, have been just eating ramen noodles and like smoothies, and that's it. And today I ate a cheeseburger from Hardee's, and it was one of the best things I've ever had in my life. It was so good.
The harrowing tale of survival from Van Lee.
That's right. It was dangerous.
Well, we are certainly glad to have you back. What's your worst dental story? Tweet us at NastyCastPod.
No, please don't. Please don't do that. No.
Do not send
just
photos.
Tweet. No. Just tweet Manly Van Lee.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Great.
At Manly Van Lee on the Twitter, at The Real Mod Day if you want to get a hold of Ron. And if you want to email us, go to nastytrackspods@gmail.com. Well, don't go there, but send whatever you want to talk to us about there.
www.nastytrackspod. Like going there, that's really kind of funny.
Yeah, that's not going to get you very far. If you like the show, everybody, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to us. It really helps us out. You can also support the show by going to patreon.com/nastypod. Sincere thanks and love to everybody who has given to us there. Also, listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. We're going to go record that bad boy right after this one, which we have definitely in no way pre-recorded before this, but Alex Chamberlain will be hopping on with us very shortly here. He's going to talk to us about a slew of pitchers, and we're also going to talk about the Robinson Cano suspension, some AJ Pollock getting an ouchie, going to look at some bullpens, and look at some waiver wire additions. So I guess we'll get our plugs out of the way real quick before we shoot to that. Van, are you capable of writing this week?
I am. In fact, I wrote an extra article since I missed. Well, I didn't miss out. I was late last week, but I covered for Keith Farnsworth, so I wrote two. One article was on struggling players who, you know, whether or not it's legit that they're struggling or if they're going to get better. Paul Goldschmidt comes to mind. And then the other one was just basically a recent prospect call-up report, including Clint Frazier and Franmil Reyes, who we'll talk about today, and guys like that. You can find those on fantraxhq.com. Check out our other podcast. And then I also host the Launch Angle podcast with Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. That was posted Wednesday the 16th yesterday. So go check it out. Listen to it. Good stuff on that one. Almost as good as the stuff that's on this one, but not quite. But we're getting there.
What do you get up to, Ron?
We got Fantastics coming up quite a bit at the end of the month here. You know, the podcast with you, fine strapping lads, and football season getting in swing over Big Guy Fantasy Sports. We're kind of getting the finishing touches on the consistency guide that we'll be putting out. Bob Lung and I on the consistency podcast, we finished up our wide receiver preview. What night did we do that? I got to think here for a minute. All the days kind of blend together. I think we did that Tuesday night. We got that out. We'll be talking about tight ends next week. We got a few big things in the hopper over there that we can't quite talk about just yet, but some big things coming over there football-wise.
Jolly good. And I've got my usual set of goodness coming out on FantraxHQ.com. I'm going to be doing Fire and Ice. That comes out on Fridays and Saturdays Saturdays over at Razzball. We've got two start at Palooza, and then Sundays is my top 100 pitchers. So without any further ado, we'll get to the episode and welcome on Alex Chamberlain. Everybody, enjoy the show. I'm forever yours.
Nest.
All right, welcome back to the Nasty Cast. It is episode 155, and joining us now on the show, he has been nominated for 3 FSWA awards, and he even brought home some gold, some silver. I don't know. He can tell us what it's made out of, but one of those fantastic awards. You know him from rotographs.com. It is Alex Chamberlain. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. This is awesome. Thanks for having me.
What is that award made out of?
It is made of glass.
Don't drop it.
I will not.
Where does that award reside though, right now? Is that on your mantle?
Yeah, do you have any cats?
Just on my desk here, just on my desk.
All right, very cool.
So I can look at it and remind myself of how great I am.
Yeah. Very cool.
You got to keep that self-esteem up. So you don't have any cats or anything, do you, that'll like bat it off the desk?
I do. I have two cats that constantly threaten to break everything I have.
Story of my life, man. I hear it.
Oh, me too. I still have yet to fix poor Brian Dozier, who is lying on his side, still in agony after his compound fracture of his right ankle.
See, Nate and I have many children that threaten to do the same thing to everything we own as well. So,
well, fact, Kit Fisto has apparently been knocked off of my shelf. So there we go. We got to throw Kit Fisto into there, and I didn't even notice that till now.
Man.
Perfect. All right. So before we get into the actual baseball goodness, Alex, I've got to ask you about your Twitter handle, man. At Dolph Holdhagen, please explain what's going on there.
That was a pretty good pronunciation. Usually people botch it. This is a good timing because they just had that Twitter tag that was like, explain your handle. And I don't know if any of you have heard of or remember or watched Homestar Runner.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely.
The online wolf. Yeah. So there's a strong bad email called Other Days, where he's trying to explain what he does on all the other days of the week when he's not answering his emails. And on Saturday, he's embarrassed about admitting he goes to swim practice. And so he's like, nope, definitely don't put on a Speedo and go to swim practice. Instead, he does battle axe lessons at the rec center. And the instructor's name is Dolph Haldhagen. So it's like the most obscure
excellent
reference to like a very what is now an obscure internet pop culture reference.
Yeah. I used to watch those every week.
Oh yeah. I loved it as a kid. Oh, and yeah. I always wanted to use that name for something. And then when I joined Twitter without having any expectation to do anything of substance whatsoever, I used that. And now I am like just I'm in too deep.
Yeah, you're pod committed. You can't change it now.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I feel satisfied with that answer. Very good. So let's roll on to the actual baseball here. Unfortunately, we were going to start out with a couple items of bad news. Robinson Cano, not only did he break his hand, he is also suspended for 80 games for performance-enhancing drugs. He's on the disabled list after undergoing surgery on his hand, but also suspended without pay due to the suspension. He will lose $11 million. And it actually was not necessarily PEDs, but it was a masking agent called furosemide, something like that. But so, Alex, what's the fallout here? What can Cano owners do?
What, they get him for probably like the last 6 weeks of the season? I mean, I guess it depends on your disabled list situation. If you can just stash them, you might as well just stash them. In terms of additions on the waiver wire, you can look, I don't know how deep your league is. Second base has been pretty good this year. You might be better off trying to swing a trade than trying to actually replace him. It's not like he was being particularly, noteworthy in his performance anyway. But, you know, I can't just name a guy off the top of my head that would be a good replacement for him. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, what I would say is, unfortunately for Cano owners, there's not a lot you can do as far as with him this season. If you cut him, I mean, somebody's going to scoop him up at the end of the year. But if you don't,
right.
do that if you don't have the DL spot. But if you do have the DL spot, you're right. Just stick him on there. A couple names I saw, Jose Perea of the Padres. Daniel Descalzo I found available in every single league. And as dumb as it is, the guy's performing. So right now there's a middle infielder you can kind of throw in there. What I found interesting is that he can actually serve the suspension alongside his DL stint. So it's not going to be like, well, you've got to get healthy, come off the DL, then you're suspended. So yeah, you're right. He's going to run it now. And I mean, the 80 days he should be healthy, then he'll get his practice games in. He'll be ready to go after that. There was a lot of links to like that core group. It was Cano, Melky Cabrera, Alex Rodriguez, those old Yankees. So there's a lot of kind of mention and talk about that. And to be honest, I don't really care about the whole PED stuff. It doesn't really scare me away from a player. I think when he comes back, he's going to be what he was, which is an aging second baseman who can hit for average and has pop.
Right.
Yeah, and I'll forego the steroid PED rant, whatever you want to call it, the masking agent, whatever. As I look down through Fantrax here, there's a couple guys kind of on the top here that are available in a little less shallow leagues. You mentioned a couple of them, Van. You know, we talk about Howie Kendrick week in and week out. He's out there. Yomer Sanchez is out there hitting .294. He's got a couple homers, 20 RBIs. Guy that I wanted to throw out there as well, if you're in some extremely deep leagues, who's been hot here as of late, is Nico Goodrum for the Tigers, second base eligible there, hitting .263, got four bombs, and has multi-position eligibility as well. So he might be out there in some deeper leagues.
Yes, and he also is about to become a superstar because the Twins recently DFA'd him. So
that's what does it right there.
So get him now.
Yes.
Yes.
I have very little to add to that, so let's move on to our second bit of news. And this one is particularly interesting, Alex, because you had been just tweeting about AJ Pollock and his awesomeness like immediately before he was injured. So I feel like you are directly to blame for this. But he had over 40 games, he already had 11 homers and 9 steals, hitting almost 300. So he's out 4 to 8 weeks with a fractured thumb. But talk a little bit about your stance on AJ Pollock, because apparently you were really in on him in the preseason.
Yeah, look, it's a contentious take, you know, because people just think injury prone is injury prone. I'm kind of the camp that is far more concerned about like muscular injuries than bone injuries. And Pollock has missed most of his time with bone related injuries, especially his elbow when he slid into home in spring training 3 years ago, whenever that was. He's not a guy who's straining his hamstring or pulling a lat muscle. He's a guy who's just playing too hard. And he played too hard again. And I'm willing to reevaluate my stance on injury prone players who play too hard, like Pollock and like Bryce Harper. But I'm still going to be in on him next year because he's really good. And obviously we're seeing that now. I don't think he's going to maintain a 40 homer pace. I still think he's like 25 tops. I don't think he's going to have much of an impact in terms of power for the rest of the year, at least not in this magnitude. But he's good, and that's why I'm in on him. And I'm the kind of person who is really reluctant to buy in on like rookie phenoms, but I'm really into buying guys who are labeled as injury prone because they frequently pay off. In this case, I put my foot just so far down my throat that I am probably going to kill myself. Yeah, so that pretty much sums that up.
Yeah, and well, with a fractured thumb too, I think maybe that saps a little bit of power when he comes back, but it won't be too egregious. But I think the speed will still be there. So this year, you're still going to get some decent value out of him. But you're right, next year, I personally am probably going to be in on him as well. It's all going to depend, of course, on draft value and so forth. A couple of names toss out there just to look at. Dustin Fowler was finally called up, although the A's are doing that thing where you remember when the A's used to be a smart organization and now they just do really just dumbass stupid shit. And basically they have been batting Fowler ninth, playing him sporadically, then they moved him to seventh. And anyway, I think once he finally starts to hit, he's going to become a very valuable power speed combo. So he's a guy to look at. I checked a semi shallow, you know, standard 12 team style league. And Dexter Fowler, the other Dexter is out there, or other Fowler's out there. He's a guy to pick up. Jacoby Jones, you know, just a couple of names out there of guys I wouldn't mind looking at. Tyler Austin, who's still eligible in the outfield in a lot of leagues. So I think there's enough people here that if you can stash Pollock on the DL, you can pick up and get some value and some stats to tide you over.
Yeah, and it's exactly too like what we're talking, what we always talk about with him is, you know, this is exactly what you think is going to happen. You're going to get some awesome production when he's on the field. You just know you're going to have a chunk of a season or maybe the whole rest of the season where he's not on the field. So, you know, as you go down the list there too, there's quite a few guys actually, fan tracks that are kind of appealing as far as outfield. There, a lot of them right around 50% owned. So it just depends upon size of the league. Of course, you know, you go down the list, you got our boy Descalso that we talked about. He's outfield eligible as well. Malik Smith hitting 308 with 9 steals. You got Max Kepler out there. You got some guys that can give you a little bit of production here. You got Franchi Corduroy there with the 6 homers. Franchi. So yeah, you got some guys you can choose from. Not too terrible.
Yeah, I you know, before I forget this, it's funny that you had mentioned that, Van, about Fowler in Oakland, because I actually had a comment on that in my I think it was my top 100 starters article on Razzball this past week, and he just like commented on my post. You know, after one plate appearance, the A's replaced him, and he was like, "Oh, great managing, you know, way to develop young talent, A's," and that was it. And then he replied after that to himself, he's like, "I was so damn mad that I forgot to ask my pitching question." So that made me chuckle. But so other people are feeling your pain as well. And well, of course, being a Dustin Fowler fan myself, I you know, echo those sentiments.
And look what they did with the Franklin Barreto. They called him up to sit on the bench for like five straight days and then sit him down. I mean, they're just they make dumb trades. They don't play smart anymore. Something has changed with the Oakland Athletics in the regards that I don't know if it's just that the rest of the field caught up to them as far as sabermetrics and, quote, money ball and all that business. But yeah. Something has changed with that organization. They just don't do smart things anymore.
Billy Bean turned into Billy Stoned. But as far as Pollock goes, I mean, obviously, I didn't expect him to do anything like this. He was actually an avoid for me. He was a don't for my dudes and don'ts in the outfield. And it actually surprised me when I wrote him up because I thought I'd be in on Pollock this year. Coming off injury, I thought his price would be really cheap. And it was a little bit discounted, but it just wasn't cheap enough. Like he was, I pulled it up here. Where was it? 61 overall. 17th outfielder. So given what he's done, obviously that would be a steal, but it's just there's so much risk involved with it that I was out on him at that price. He definitely went higher in drafts than I thought he would. And I was drafting guys like Starling Marte and Byron Buxton, who, Buxton is a bust from those two so far. But, I also talked about cheaper guys like Lorenzo Cain and Manny Margot later on. Ender Inciarte that can give you sort of the same thing at a cheaper price. So I really wasn't too interested, and I can't say that I'll be more interested next year. But it'll depend on his price, it is nice to see the extra power in his. He's whiffing a lot more. The hard contact is way up, so it's definitely a different approach. So that has me very interested, and he was still hitting for average, so we'll see what he looks like when he gets back to see how interested I am next year. But let's move on to some bullpens real quick, and it's not too exciting to talk about bullpens, so we're actually going to limit it to just two. We could probably spend half this episode talking about bullpens, but we're going to start off with our favorite Angels. We've talked about it like pretty much every episode this year, and of course Keenan Middleton, as soon as he got back from the disabled list, Socha decided it was a good idea to throw him out there like 3 out of the 4 days immediately after he was reinstated. Now he's got UCL damage. He's probably done for the season. So, Alex, is there anybody in particular that you like, or is it just sort of a cluster?
Oh, it's a cluster. It's a super cluster. I would prefer. Okay, so what I'd prefer to see is probably Blake Parker. But I don't know if there is actually a good answer to who I'd like to see. I think there's a lot of, I don't want to say there's a lot of hype, but I feel like there's a lot of hype for Justin Anderson to close the ninth. I think Blake Parker, if we're talking about loyalties, might have the most loyalty from Socha. This is a situation that I've avoided all year in every league, and I try not to think about it. And I'm glad I haven't had to think about it until this precise moment.
Sorry.
It's fine. I mean, I don't have to deal with it in practice. So I think I would bet on Blake Parker being the cream that rises to the top. But again, I would rather gamble on someone from the next bullpen that we're about to talk about and just kind of not worry about this. I don't know about you guys.
It's kind of gross, and as the resident Angels fan, I've watched this all play out. I've watched Socha bring in Keenan Middleton in like the fifth inning of whatever game and his return back to have him throw, even though I don't even want to talk about him. But Jim Johnson has looked disgusting. The game last night was a travesty that I'm like very angry about. First off, Socha brings in Jose Alvarez, your left-hander, to load the bases and then leaves him in to go ahead and pitch to Jose Altuve, one of their better right-handed hitters on the team. And of course, Altuve hits a double that scores 3 runs and the Astros win. It's just stupid managing. So that's the first and most important part about that. But Jim Johnson also had a stupid play where it was the first baseman Pujols fielded the ball, underhanded it to first base, and Johnson didn't watch it in the glove and it bounced off. And so another run scored. And Johnson's been scored upon a lot, so I'm going to eliminate him from all of it. I think Blake Parker probably could be the guy, but I don't think he will be because something has pissed off Socha about him. In the past, he liked him. He loved him a lot last year, but he is not giving him any love this year. And that Justin Anderson thing, it has some truth to it because they've been giving him some really important spots. So if I'm right, going to guess, I do actually think it's going to be Justin Anderson. Now, I think he has the stuff to be okay, but you're right. This is not a bullpen situation that I really like. I was great with it when it was Keenan Middleton, but now that we're down to the dregs here, where Cam Bedrosian's, you know, throwing 2 miles an hour slower than he had last year, and Johnson sucks, and on, it's just not pleasant to watch for sure.
These guys really suck. Like they're. Yeah, well, and it's one of those things too, you know, you hear all the, you know, and we'll talk about this with the White Sox pen too, you know, with Renteria, is you hear the managers talk about, we have these guys, you know, it depends on situation and it's a fluid situation and all this. That translates into me. It's kind of like when you used to hear a college coach in football talk about rotating in two quarterbacks, and then the analysts always say, well, when you have two quarterbacks, it kind of means you have no quarterbacks. When you're rotating all these guys in a closer, it kind of means you have no closer. And so I kind of look at this the same way. I mean, I was kind of in on Jim Johnson a little bit. I'm not completely writing him off yet, but the only guy I had any interest in any time before this was Middleton. And with him being out, you know, I think I'm better off just, you know, speculating somewhere else, you know, kind of like Alex said, might maybe look at somebody in the Sox pen. I don't know, but I this is another bullpen that, you know, that we've talked about quite a few of these, it seems like this season and the end of last season. I don't want anything to do with any of these guys if I can help it.
Yeah, you know, if I have no opinion, I usually try to sort of BS my way into convincing somebody that I have an opinion. But I'm just going to go ahead and say, in this situation, I have no f***ing clue who is going to lead that team in saves for the rest of the year. Your guess is as good as mine. So there's my input. How about
that? Well, I don't want to completely write out the fact that, I mean, they could maybe trade for an arm, and it could be a guy they don't even have yet, too. I'd almost speculate on that more than anybody they currently have.
Could be. For what it's worth, I picked up Jim Johnson before he was horrible. He was immediately horrible.
When was this? You mean 5 years ago?
No.
Before he was horrible?
Like last week.
He was still a Brewer.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe a more interesting bullpen. We'll move on to Chicago quickly here. Apparently, Joaquin Soria is in hot water despite having only allowed runs in 2 of 12 appearances this year before today. That was enough to demote him into a closer by committee, apparently. So who are you casting your lot with here, Alex?
It seems like Bruce Rondon is going to get the first stab at this, but I think Nate Jones is going to be the one who emerges. I think he was always probably the best arm in that bullpen, or at least of those three. I mean, that bullpen is also equally disastrous in terms of actual talent. Rondon has just never lived up to any kind of potential that he may have had. Soria was never actually particularly good. And while he may not have deserved to be demoted, it's not necessarily unjustified, I think, from like an actual talent standpoint. So this is another one where if I'm fine with my closer situation, I might speculate on Nate Jones if he's still available. I wouldn't actually be surprised if he wasn't in deeper leagues. But I can see Rondon being the one to get the stab at it in the early goings here. But I like Nate Jones long term.
Yeah, and I wrote down, well, first off, the first word I wrote down on both of these is just gross, because that's really how I feel about it. But I wrote down that, ironically, Soria looks like the best pitcher of all of them. I mean, he has the best stats. So we're all right here in that maybe he didn't really deserve to be, quote, demoted as of right now. But I also don't think he's the best pitcher for the job. And I agree with you, Alex, that would be Nate Jones, in my opinion, even though the numbers don't necessarily back that up. I think he's... I just think he's the best pitcher. Now, if Rondon, who's probably going to get the next opportunity, if he converts that, I think he's the closer. But I don't think he has the temperament, and I don't think he has the ability anymore after all these injuries to be a good closer. So I'm not casting a whole lot of bets on Rondon. So you're right. For me, I think Nate Jones eventually rises to be the closer in this staff, but it's another one that's just kind of a gross situation to monitor.
Yeah, you guys both kind of made my argument for me. I don't have a whole lot to add. I was kind of under the school that, you know, as we talked about the White Sox before, that these guys are going to be showcased to maybe be moved on, but it's hard to move on guys that are pitching like crap. And so I don't know necessarily if you're going to see that happen, but of any of those three that we mentioned, I think it's Nate Jones for me. You know, Rondon has had a lot of opportunities, and you can blame it on injury, you can blame it on whatever, but he just hasn't been able to grab a hold of that closer job and keep a hold of it. None of these guys really seem to, but I think as far as just pure pitching, I think Nate Jones is the guy you got to go with as well.
Yeah, I've got Tori in a couple spots. So he hasn't exactly been locked down, but I'm a little bitter about this one, if you couldn't tell from the way I set it up. I'm holding on to Soria, but I'm not exactly hopeful that he's getting saves anytime soon. He came in the seventh inning of a tied game today, which does not indicate that he is going to be getting the next save. So it would be fair to roster either Jones or Rondon. I don't know. Rondon seems to have some kind of steam right now, so I'd probably gamble on him first. But with that walk rate, I'm just not convinced that he hangs on to it. So long term, I'm going to go with Jones as well. We're going to take a break here and then come back and dive into some pitching. All right, welcome back to the NastyCast. Time to talk some pitching. We're going to go over. Was that some slurping? Is that some chalky milk, Ron?
Mm-hmm.
Delicious.
Delicious.
We've got a bunch of guys that Mr. Chamberlain has written up recently, and they are all very, very intriguing, which I suppose is why he wrote about them. But we're going to talk about them even more. So we're going to start off with a man who has given us all whiplash recently. It's Dylan Bundy. Alex, I believe he was the most recent guy that you wrote about. So what the hell's going on with Dylan Bundy?
I think Dylan Bundy's still going to be a good pitcher. The things that he's doing this year are improvements that he needed to make upon previous year's performance in terms of the process, so to speak, in terms of his pitch selection, in terms of getting ahead in counts. He just looks like he's generally improving, but my whole gist with him in this post that I wrote was that his fastball is it's one of the worst fastballs that's being thrown in baseball in terms of the damage that it's allowing. And it's kind of unique because his slider is one of the best. And I don't think there's any pitcher who has such a, dichotomous pair of pitches, in that one is so incredibly lethal and one is so incredibly powerless in terms of retiring batters. And so he looks good, but he goes into the start, he doesn't record a single out. His fastball allows 3 of his 4 home runs. He threw it like 16 of the 19 pitches he threw, or 14 of the 19 pitches he threw. There's no reason why he should be throwing it this often when he has such a lethal secondary pitch. In my post, some guy commented and said, he has arm problems, blah, blah, blah. It's actually irresponsible that you're saying this. And I was like, well, yeah, maybe that's true. Like, I know he had Tommy John surgery, but also he was a power pitcher at one point, and he didn't throw a slider. So I'm not totally convinced that the arm problems were related to throwing breaking stuff. I think it might have actually been because he throws 101 miles per hour in college or whatever. I think if he adjusts his pitch selection, he could go from being really good with huge implosions to just being legitimately elite. For the rest of the season, I see him being like a 25 strikeout or 25% strikeout, 8% walk guy. He'll be your number 2 or 3 starter for your rotation. His ERA will probably end up in the low 4s by the end of the season, once he improves upon this disastrous outing that he couldn't avoid. But he's not taking the next step yet, but I see it. I see the light at the end of that tunnel, and I want him to approach the end of the tunnel as opposed to just like sitting there throwing fastballs that are really still. So,
and I think a lot of it was cutter wise with the Orioles. I know there for a while the organization said you couldn't throw cutters. They stopped. The other one that's in the minors right now that's always hurt. Their other top, Hunter Harvey. They told him he couldn't throw a cutter. They told Bundy they couldn't throw a cutter. And then finally, when they said, forget it, we've stopped them from doing it and they're still hurt, go ahead and throw cutters, everybody's been okay. So I don't think that's part of it, but an interesting anecdote. I just wrote that he is what he is right now. He's kind of homer prone. He strikes out about a batter an inning, which is an improvement over what he had been doing. I think he sticks to that batter an inning rather than the 8.06 K per 9 he had last year. Probably going to have a 4 ERA, 3 walks per 9. He's not going to pitch super deep in games, but I do think he hits 108, 190 innings this year. Has a shot at 200, which, considering his history of injury, that in and of itself is a victory on its own. He's a guy I'm just not that interested in, but maybe there's some potential for more. But this year, I think he's just going to be kind of a guy who just gets you some innings and some stats.
Yeah, and it's funny, the fastball you were talking about, Alex, too, and he's actually throwing that less than last year, which is kind of a crazy stat. He's still throwing that 20% more than he is throwing that slider, though. But one of the things with Dylan Bundy, too, is he's like the oldest 25-year-old, I think, that has ever walked the earth. I mean, it seems like he's been around forever. And, you know, I think back to, you know, when he was first coming out, I know there was a lot that was said about his, I think it was his pregame routine. And one of the things I remember that stuck out about it was he would play long toss across the outfield, but he would throw every toss like he was throwing a fastball, and he would try to throw it like as far as he could. And a lot of people just talked about how he had just had this unorthodox way of warming up and how that might catch up with him. So you got to kind of wonder maybe if that's something that in the long run has really affected him as well. But yeah, I'm kind of with you guys too. I think, you know, a lot of what you're seeing right now, I think you might see the ERA come down a little bit, but he is averaging a little over 10 strikeouts per nine. The three walks are pretty standard for what he does. And so, you know, I think that what you're getting out of him is pretty much what you're going to expect to get the rest of the season.
Yeah, I could do without the headache of owning Dylan Bundy myself. It would be great if he started throwing just crazy sliders, like you said, Alex. That would be awesome. And all of a sudden, he's he's Patrick Corbin, or he's Tyson Ross, I guess.
Right.
Although he's not maybe the greatest example himself, but and I wonder if that's something that's, I don't know, that the Orioles are doing. You know, Van, like you mentioned, when they wouldn't let him throw his cutter slider. Whatever you want to call it. And then all of a sudden they did. And of course he was awesome. But I wonder if that's just, I don't know if that's like a philosophical thing in their organization. Like maybe you just can't throw so many breaking balls. But it would be interesting to consider that in the long run as far as dynasty value, if he did end up turning into that sort of pitcher.
Well, to piggyback on that real quick, I mean, you know, we look at the Orioles too, and man, that really works with their pitching prospects. They've had a lot of success, haven't they?
Oh God. Yeah. There's so many weird things about that organization. Like there was just Ben Badler was just tweeting about how they completely ignored the international market too. You know, as the J2 crop sort of starts to line up this year, and it's like, yeah, brilliant. No good prospects have ever come from another country. So it's a good idea to completely ignore that aspect of the world, but that is neither here nor there. So anyway, let's move on to another pitcher here, Marco Gonzalez. Before you get into him, even Alex, I thought it was really interesting that you used this ERA minus Sierra as far as sort of calculating value and finding true talent with these pitchers. So tell us a little bit about the perks of using that, and then how you use that with Marco Gonzalez.
Sure. Well, it's not uncommon to use metrics like FIP or XFIP, just kind of to gauge a pitcher's true talent level. I kind of recently converted to Sierra, mostly because I had been too lazy to do so earlier, but I finally did it. Sierra, it better account just the way that the regression model that calculates the coefficients, all the kind of complex stuff that underpins it, it accounts for the interaction between ground balls and strikeout rates and walk rates. It's just kind of a more holistic method as opposed to just looking at like home run to fly ball rate, strikeouts and walks. Like it looks at how strikeouts and walks interact with each other. It looks at how all these other metrics are interacting with each other. And it does correlate with ERA better than XFIP or FIP does. So in theory, it is a better predictor both in season and in seasons going forward than the other FIP metric. So that's why I converted to that. So in theory, using ERA minus Sierra is just a way of seeing who's overperforming or underperforming what their expected performance should be. It's not, it's not StatCast. It's not the StatCast era wonderment of, X metrics, but it does pretty well without having to get like way too granular about it. The thing with Marco Gonzalez is he has a 24% strikeout rate and he has like an 8.7% swinging strike rate. And those are just so completely incongruous. And so I was just trying to figure out, I was having this moment of like cognitive dissonance where I was trying to figure out who I should add in these deep leagues where I'm kind of struggling to pull together a good staff. And I see Marco Gonzalez is available and he looks great. I mean, he has six times as many strikeouts as walks, basically. But I had to like really dig in deep to see that the Sierra, this 3.48 Sierra, essentially saying that he has deserved a 3.5 ERA, is a little bit misleading. And I just don't think the strikeouts are going to stick. The walk rate will come up a little bit, but he's just overperforming in that regard to a pretty magnificent degree. Now, I wouldn't say overperforming because he has like a 5.3 ERA with a 400 BABIP. So there's all sorts of like weird different regression things that are going to happen to him. He's not going to allow as many hits. He's probably going to be stranding more runners. But he's also going to be striking out fewer guys too. And I just don't see him actually being an effective starter despite what the so-called underlying metrics might suggest.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad you said that about Sierra. I also want to start converting to utilizing it more, but it's literally me creating the FanGraphs account and changing my setup. That's the thing. The laziness of not doing that, it is what's keeping me from utilizing it. Because as it stands now, ERA, FIP, and XFIP are right next to each other, so it's so easy just to use those. As far as Gonzalez goes, yeah, 405 BABIP. The strikeouts are up. The walks are quite a bit down. I think you're right. I think it's a conflux of bizarre trends that are all going to even out. But what's the end result? End result is just, to me, like kind of a guy who's not going to walk very many but probably isn't going to strike out very many, who's just kind of going to be an innings eater. So I think maybe a 4 ERA guy who strikes out 7.5 per 9. So nothing too exciting to get too excited about, but maybe someone that if you desperately need innings, he's probably going to provide them this year, and that could hopefully fill a chunk of what you need if you're in a deeper league.
I'll say one more thing before we move on to the next guy. Sorry, just I know that I was on Baseball Reference. I was on Baseball Reference today actually, and after kind of on Marco a little bit, I saw that he's been doing a really good job of getting ahead in counts. So I can see how that'll benefit him if he's, if he's able to throw his best pitches when they matter and be in those, those advantageous counts more often. I can see him outperforming his peripherals a little bit, but I don't think it's enough to explain all of that. But there is something that merits this overperformance a little bit. I think he's in the, the upper 5 percentile at this point of, first pitch strikes and 0-2 counts and things like that. So he's been efficient. I'll give him that much.
Yeah, I got to say that when you look across his stat line here on FanGraphs, you go through all the different numbers. He is one of the more strange combinations of the K per nine and the walks and the strand rate. And when you take everything into consideration, he's kind of all over the place. But I mean, his career K per nine is about 8, and he's walking 3 guys per nine. You see the 1.77 walks per nine is down quite a bit. So I think he's, like you said, Van, I think he's more of a deeper league guy, although the XFIP looks pretty good at 3.09. You guys were alluding to the Sierra. I'm one of those guys too that's kind of trying to make the conversion. Van, I know exactly what you mean about all that stuff being right there, and it's just set up so nicely. I'm kind of lazy in that regard myself. But a guy that I'm not really too actively looking to add, unless it's maybe like a 15 team league or deeper, where I need a guy that can eat me up some innings.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a 309, XFIP turning into his ERA with a 30, just a shade under 40% hard contact rate. So it's tough to do that, like you said, when you're. Your strikeout rate is projected to go down because you're just not getting a ton of swing strikes. So let's move on to another guy who has personally been maddening me in the podcast league, and that is Chris Archer, who I bought at auction to be my ace. And boy, I had immediate regret as soon as like his first game went out there. I'm like, oh my God, he's in the AL East with the Yankees and the Red Sox. This is going to suck. And it hasn't got much better. So Alex, what's going on with Chris Archer?
I don't know, man. I want to come. I've been coming to his defense for, this is like 2.5 years at this point. I've been of the persuasion that he got unlucky the last 2 years, once in regard to, I think it was home runs, and then another time in regard to his batting average on balls in play. And I think when you normalize both of those things, i.e., when you look at the difference between his ERA minus his Sierra, he's still a high-quality pitcher. And we may have reached a point where Archer just legitimately underperforms His underlying metrics, and that's just a thing. But at this point, he's striking out more guys than ever. At least when I had written about him, he was striking out more guys than ever, generating more whiffs than ever, keeping the walks in check. I don't know if it's something about Tropicana Field. I don't know if it's just Archer. I'm still, I guess it's really easy to be in on him when you don't own him anywhere. Because I don't. I didn't actually put my money where my mouth is, but I do think that he'll emerge from this as still a good pitcher. I have faith that that happens. But he's really testing my patience, and I think I've been one of the more patient ones with him.
I agree. I'm not an Archer owner, but I also think that he will kind of rebound and become, you know, what he was, which what he is and will be, I think, is we have to admit he's just a 4 ERA guy. He's not a true ace, but he's a guy who's going to throw 200 innings and strike out a ton of batters and, you know, kind of keep you in games, limit the walks. The whip's going to be somewhere in the middle. But I still like him. Now, Jeff Zimmerman, who co-hosts the Launch Angle podcast with me, had some good points to make, which are that he's a two-pitch pitcher, and the problem is his fastball is just getting hit. It's in the zone too much, and it's getting hit too much. So that, you know, kind of makes the slider less effective. So if he can't get that fastball, A, under control, and B, able to utilize in a proper fashion, he's just not going to get better. Now, if we look at his stats here, we just talked about FIP and XFIP. XFIP's the one that talks about, or kind of includes home runs a little bit more in it. It's the one that's nicest on him at 3.86. His home run rate is the highest of his career, so maybe he's been unlucky in that regard, but it's also the era of the home run, so you kind of have to wonder if that's just kind of what it is. Ultimately, though, I still think he gets back to that 200-inning pace of, you know, 11 K per nine, 10 and a half K per nine, something like that, and provides you that kind of value. But I'm out on him ever becoming an ace and in on him just being a good pitcher with a bad ERA.
Yeah. And Alex, your response, you know, as a Rays fan, that's kind of the response. Anytime anybody asks you anything about the Rays, you're just kind of like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. And so, it's same thing with him, you know, and I, what's funny to me is, I mean, I guess it's not funny because I own him in a couple places and I'm a fan of the team he plays on. I kind of compare him with the 4 ERA, with the 200 innings, the 200 strikeouts. He's a little bit Jeff Samardzija-ish, I guess, and I really hate that because I really don't like Jeff Samardzija. But, I mean, that's kind of what he is. I mean, he's, you know, and he's gotten a little better the last few starts. But it's just not there, and it's just I almost wonder if it's more mental than anything, just that he was kind of the subject of trade rumors all season, and he's still hanging around. I mean, I know the Rays have been a little better than what they were expected to be, but they're still headed nowhere fast, and especially in that division. And so I wonder, you know, if it is going to be a case of a change of scenery might do him good in real life. But, you know, if you have him on your fantasy team, you're kind of stuck with him because I don't really think you're going to get a whole hell of a lot for him. And you just kind of have to kind of ride it out and get what you can get and maybe try to compensate it for other places. But I don't really know if he's going to stay with the Rays too much longer, but as a Rays fan, I like having him in the rotation, but at the same time, it's funny being a Rays fan, 'cause you almost kind of root for these guys to go on and maybe kind of to have that change of scenery and win somewhere else and get around a different kind of culture. So I'm kind of hoping that happens for him as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I you can use him as sort of like a fantasy number three. He's going to get you plenty of innings. He's going to get you strikeouts. The whip won't be that bad, but the ERA isn't going to be that great. And this is the third year in a row, fourth year in a row, technically fifth year in a row, another 6 year in a row. Oh my God, every single year over year, his hard contact rate just keeps going up and up and up. And this year it's at 41.9% right now as we record this. And without looking at the leaderboards, I mean, among like qualified starters, that's got to be right up near the top. So I don't know if I necessarily see him reversing that trend anytime soon. So perhaps the days of Archer being an ace are just plain gone. John Gray, let's move on to him. Maybe the skies are a little sunnier over there with John Gray. What do you think about him, Alex?
So the research, so to speak, on John Gray wasn't necessarily whether he's good. I've been a fan of John Gray, I guess, like ever since he broke out in 2016. I don't know if you'd call it a breakout. He had a 4.61 ERA. But, you know, for in terms of the underlying metrics that we're always looking at, especially for Rockies pitchers, he looked pretty good. The big thing that I looked at that I hadn't ever really tried to quantify is like the amount of an effect that that Coors Field has on the pitchers who pitch there. And essentially, you know, it is obviously it's a hitter's park. It adds like 30 points of BABIP to the average pitcher. So these, you know, his career BABIP of 330, it might be slightly inflated over his true talent BABIP, but we can expect it. We can reasonably expect it to be worse than league average just because he's always pitching at Coors Field. And while that is kind of a given, like we do, like we internalize that, we know that Coors Field is bad. It also means that he's probably going to underperform his, you know, his FIP, his XFIP, his Sierra by anywhere from, you know, a half a run to three quarters of a run over a full season, just because he's making half of his starts at home. So it's more of like a cautionary tale that while you're using Sierra to forecast a pitcher's performance from that point forward, given the stats that he currently has, it's kind of a risky thing to do, or really just not an advisable thing to do for Rockies pitchers, unless you're keeping in mind that, yeah, he's not going to converge on that number. He's going to fall, you know, he might fall as much as a half run short of that. But just keeping that in mind, you know, we can still imagine that he might be a high threes, low fours ERA guy. He's not going to be the 299 XFIP guy that we see right now in terms of XFIP.
And I absolutely love John Gray. I think he is an ace. And if he were on a team that didn't play in Colorado, he would have really, really nice numbers. And I think that's a very good point in that he's just a guy that because he plays there, the actual numbers are going to show it. And they're going to be a little bit higher than that FIP, than that Sierra, than that XFIP, just because of his home ballpark. I'm trying to buy him in just about every single league I can find because everything looks really good. Early on in the season, he apparently had a little bit of an arm slot issue where he was his release point was off per his curve and his fastball, so it was a little easier to spot. They've since corrected that per Jeff Zimmerman again. So that's a really nice thing to know that he's fixed that. So maybe that 4.85 ERA does drop below 4 after some more starts. So I'm buying all over the place if I can get a hold of John Gray.
Yeah, it's tough for me because I have one league especially that I'm just trying. I've tried to wait it out and patience hasn't really gotten me anywhere, so I'm just making some changes. And he's actually out on the waiver wire, and he's a guy that I had my finger on the trigger the other day. And it's just these home and away splits are just such. I want to sit down and look at his schedule and try to figure out, you know, maybe in the next couple weeks how many starts he's going to have at home and on the road. Because is him being out there, is he really worth adding in that roster spot if I only feel like I can use him in those away starts? Because it's, you know, with the 6 ERA at home, you know, he's given up 19 earned runs and 28 innings as opposed to 9 on the road. It's just a night and day difference. And we know that anyway, you know, that with Rockies pitchers anyway, you know, like you guys both alluded to before, you know, 355 wOBA at home. So I'm not, you know, saying anything we don't already know, but it's just something for me. Do I want to use a roster spot on a guy where I feel like I can only use him like 50% of the time? So I'm kind of struggling with that in that one league. I'm not really sure what to do.
Sell him. No, not at all. I just wanted to say that one of the most interesting things in that article was that bit about the Rockies pitchers at home underperformed their collective FIP by 0.79 runs, their XFIP by 1.13 runs, and their Sierra by 1.30 runs. And then on the road, the difference there was like negligible. So it's just a great way to put into easy numbers just how crazy it is to pitch a Coors. The next guy, a guy I was very high on in the preseason, but he's seen a little bit of velocity dips recently, Patrick Corbin. So are you concerned about Patrick Corbin these days, Alex?
Yeah, I it's interesting because I wrote my post and none of that had happened yet. I was mostly, right. I was praising him for leaning into his slider last year. Corbin has always been good, frankly. I mean, to say that he'd never had this potential, I think, would have been a little bit misleading. To say that the breakout was surprising is also slightly misleading. Not like I predicted it, but I do have my fair share of cheap shares of Corbin this year because, you know, I liked him in the past and I saw what he did in the second half last year, and he's still leaning into that slider. The thing that he did this year was he's turned his curve into a slow curve. He's throwing it like 6 mile per hour slower, and I think that's playing up all of his other pitches. everything looks better, and it already looked good last year. So that's, I think that's kind of where that big surge in these first, like, whatever, 7 or 8 starts came from. But now with the velocity issue, I don't really know what to do. I think it reminds me a lot of Alex Wood last year, I guess, who basically did the same thing, broke out in a huge way, huge strikeout numbers, really low walks, just dominated the competition for 12 starts, 15 starts, whatever it was. He didn't make it. Corbin didn't make it quite that far. And then the velocity hit him. Or not the velocity, I'm sorry, the velocity woes hit him. I guess his arm got tired, fatigued, whatever. We're not really sure what's going on with Corbin quite yet. I wouldn't be surprised if it's some kind of fatigue, but regardless, I remember it being kind of like Alex Wood, who everyone was disappointed with in the second half of the season, yet still pitched really well, all things considered. Maybe had like a, I'd have to look. I'm pretty sure it was a mid-3 ERA. It wasn't like he was a total disaster. It's just that he wasn't a true ace in the second half. And I don't think we can reasonably expect Corbin to be a true ace, especially at the price that we bought him at. No one purchased him as a true ace, so to expect more than that is being a little bit greedy. I think he'll still be good for the rest of the year. I'm not overly concerned about the velocity yet. I'm sure there's other people who would disagree and are more concerned. I'm just kind of playing the waiting game because I'm not going to trade him for anything unless I get like a true ace in return. So it's, again, it's one of those guys where you just kind of have to wait and see what's going on.
Yeah. And you know, the velocity thing is, that's just it. Wait and see, give it a couple of games, see what happens. Now, even if you're not a baseball player, but if you know how to grip a baseball, go out and throw a fastball and then go out and try and throw a breaking pitch. And you can tell the difference, how much harder it is to throw, say, a slider versus a fastball. Your fingers hurt more, your elbow hurts more, your shoulder hurts more. So the fact that he's increased his breaking pitch usage, particularly the slider, that alone tells me that, I mean, there's going to be more stress placed upon his body. It's why we said for a long time that Chris Archer might just fall apart one day, which, who knows, maybe that's why he's struggling. It's just because of the slider usage. So there's entirely the chance that that just really hurts him. Plus, he's a guy who's had Tommy John surgery. Now, that was a couple of years ago, but that also means that maybe he wasn't, you know, quite as durable to begin with just because he needed the surgery. If the velocity comes back and everything's fine, I mean, if he throws 190 innings, he's going to strike out 220-plus batters, and you're going to get a really, really good stat. So I agree. Hold. I mean, this is a guy to hang on to unless you can get something that you really feel blown away with, because even with a loss in velocity, I think the numbers are still going to be pretty good. But I think it comes back, and he stays the true stud that he is this season.
Yeah, and it, you know, kind of like you guys both said, he's pitching it at a level that's above what you probably paid for him, and so you just got to kind of ride that out. I mean, I think, you know, you look at the ERA is still good, FIP and XFIP are nice. The one thing that does concern me a little bit is the hard contact rate's kind of up there. He's a top 15 guy as far as the hard contact he's given up at 39.8%, and so that's a little bit concerning. But it's translating into less than a homer per nine, so it's not too big of a deal just yet. The 82% strand rate's still nice, and so, you know, he's just kind of pitching above what you likely gave up for him if you stuck your neck out to get him. So I don't think I would be trying to sell high or by any means on him, because he's, you know, he's kind of the anti Chris Archer there. He's kind of outplaying what you paid for him in the draft, as opposed to Chris Archer. You know, kind of like you alluded to, Nate, you drafted him as your ace, and you know, he's kind of pitching like a number three. So I think you just ride it out. I think you appreciate what he's given you, and I think you're going to be really happy what the return is at the end of the year.
And it's been made really difficult. I've heard this from multiple people online that, you know, like whether you're playing on Yahoo or maybe everywhere but Yahoo, but anywhere you get like those RotoWire updates and you click on the player page, like if you're trying to sell Patrick Corbin, whoever you're selling him to, all they have to do is open up this player page, and there's like a big write-up about how his velocity is way down and like sell. It's like, it's impossible to sell him to people like who aren't really in the know if all they have to do is open up this freaking window and it tells them, like, you know, don't step on this freaking landmine right now. So if you sold him, good luck. Like, good job. That was amazing in the first place. But yeah, even if he does regress quite a bit, I mean, 253 ERA right now. I projected him for a 360 ERA. And even that, like from where you drafted him, is so much positive value. And with the strikeouts too, that, yeah, I'm going to wade through this as well. You know, his results have still been there for the most part, even with this diminished velocity. So it's not like we're hitting the eject button real soon. But one more guy before we get into the waiver wire, which we will blow through pretty quickly because we're running a bit long here. But Jose Berríos, we got to talk about this guy, the quote-unquote ace of my beloved Twins. So, Alex, he had a much better start finally his last time out. What's going on with Jose Berríos?
He looks better. He looks better. Yeah, I think so. What I kind of diagnosed in my very imperfect diagnosis of him was, you know, when he came up in 2016, when it was an unmitigated disaster, he was having some issues with his arm slot, and in 2017 he fixed that, and in 2018 he sustained that fix. So it seems to me that something mechanical was preventing him from tapping into the talent that he very clearly exhibited in AAA, or, you know, just throughout the minors, let's say. This year, he looks better. I did not necessarily give him the credit he was due in my write-up. I think I kind of faded him a little too hard. He does, you know, he obviously looks good in terms of keeping his walks in control, and he's getting more whiffs. His curveball does look better, and that's easily been his best pitch to date in terms of spotting it, in terms of getting whiffs, just kind of everything playing up his arsenal. I just don't see enough supporting that pitch. He doesn't have really other effective secondary pitches. His fastball is okay. So the thing is, I was really high on him, and so for me, it feels disappointing. For other people, it's probably like kind of, you know, it's an improvement, or, you know, it's exciting, but it just feels like he's not going to reach his potential. And now it's really short-sighted of me to say that because he's 23. But until further notice, like, I just can't see him being a true ace. He's easily the Twins staff ace, but I don't know if he's going to be a fantasy ace. And by the end of this year, I think his ERA is still going to be high threes, low fours, despite what the peripherals suggest. I just don't see him truly taking that next step just yet.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing to look at this season is that, and I'm one of those guys too. I love Jose Berríos. I mean, he's a guy that I really enjoy watching. He's got good stuff. He just has to have that oomph, that extra something. I kind of compare it to Garrett Richards, a guy who had the greatest stuff in the world but was just awful for many, many years. And then suddenly one year, boom, it happens, and he's really good. And I think we could see that with Berríos. That may not be this season. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be quality. And, I mean, look, he's walking 1.69 batters per nine, so the control's there. The home runs are a little high, so maybe that comes down and helps him out a little bit. But the strikeouts haven't quite got to where I would expect them to get. But I do really, really like him. We've seen the growing pains. I think he has the stuff to be a number two right now, at least. But eventually, maybe he does become that ace. And right now, he's a 3.5 to 4 ERA player for me. But I think he could grow that into that 2.5 to 3 ERA guy eventually. As you know, he's, like you mentioned, Alex, he's just 23, so we've got plenty of time for him to get better.
Yeah, ditto. I think the biggest thing is he's 23 years old, so let's give him a little bit more time to develop here. But, you know, I don't know so much if the K's are going to come up. I mean, when you look through his numbers in the minors and then in his last few years in the majors, it's right around that 8.5 mark. So he's right kind of in where he normally is with that. I'd like to see the strand rate come up a little bit. It's still at only 68%. So he's got to limit the damage a little bit with that. But I think it's a solid bet, like you said, Van, to see the high 3 ERA. I think his numbers from last season are – very, very similar to what you're going to see this season, maybe with the walks a little bit less. So, but I think, like Alex, like you said too, it's a matter of the secondary stuff catching up with the fastball that's hitting, you know, 93, 94 miles an hour on the average. But he's a guy I like to watch too as well, you know, just with the stuff that he does have. But the secondary pitches, I think, are what's going to be the key factor to kind of separate him and make him take that next step.
Yeah, it's all about that curveball. You touched on it, Alex. And that is what was missing when he was really struggling hard. And Berríos himself had talked about it, and I wrote about it on my top 100 pitchers at Razzball this past week. I thought, well, maybe you might want to sit Berríos until he gets his curveball fixed. Well, he did, because he was back up to 27% whiffs on that pitch, whereas the previous start before that against the Angels, he did not get one single whiff on that curveball. And before that, it was just 6%, 11%, down from 29%, 26% in the starts before that. So that seems to be ironed out again. And, you know, it'll be interesting, too, to see how much, if at all, he's affected by the loss of Jason Castro, because he's out for the season now after undergoing some meniscus surgery today. It was only going to be 4 to 6 weeks is what they expected, but now it seems like he's going to be lost the whole season. So you're going to have Mitch Garver back there a lot more often. But he was he's a very good defensive catcher himself, so hopefully they don't lose too much with him. He's actually one of the best defensive catchers in AAA last year, if I'm not mistaken. I do like Berríos. He seems like he's hopefully got that curveball fixed, and he should be good to go moving forward. So we're going to move on to our last segment here, and that is the waiver wire. All right, so in the interest of time, since we're running a little bit over here, Alex, I'm just going to throw these to you and kind of gauge your interest. Let me know if you're interested in these guys or not.
And oh, so you don't like us anymore. You're going to kick us off the show? I see how it is.
Yeah, well, you know what? You bailed out last week, so I've got to banish you to the dungeon a little bit.
Fair enough.
All right, so Alex, we'll just get your expertise on these handful of guys here. Freddy Peralta, he went to Coors in his debut and went 5 2/3 one-hit innings with 13 strikeouts and 2 walks. It does not get too much more impressive than that. So are you interested in Freddy Peralta at all? And if so, what type of leagues are you targeting him in?
I think you got to be interested in him, and I think you have to consider targeting him in all leagues. I don't think he's going to be anywhere near as good, obviously, as he just was. 13 strikeouts is the most he's ever struck out in any game, including in the minor leagues. His peripherals are kind of Michael Kopech-y to me, which is a pretty high compliment, but that means a lot of walks. And I think his kind of high strikeout, high walk profile reminds me of like an Alex Meyer type, or more positively like a Blake Snell. And obviously Blake Snell turned the corner this year. The last 2 years, he was kind of a middling starter. He was barely kind of scraping, standard mixed league material. So I think Freddy Peralta can be that kind of guy. I think you have to target him in anything else.
Very good. All right. How about next guy on this list, Franmil Reyes. Terrific name. We actually talked about him last week on Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, our sister podcast, which everybody should go check out. He was just called up this past week. He had 14 bombs in 36 games in AAA with a 442 on base. So you might say that he deserves that call up. So what are you expecting from Franmil, and where are you picking him up at, Alex?
That was a hell of a stretch that he had. I think... I'm a little worried about the contact issues. I think that's kind of just the Padres' MO at this point. He's got guys who are just toolsy as all hell, but have contact issues. That's just what you got to be a Padre these days. I think he can probably hit another 20 home runs. I don't think he's going to bat better than – he might honestly not bat better than 240. So I'm not expecting a whole lot in that regard. I think he'll have a decent on-base percentage. I think you have to target him in 12-team leagues or deeper. But if you're expecting what just happened at AAA, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
I think he is pretty well, like, with all his talent, I'm pretty sure Hunter Renfroe is just kind of gone. Like, I was never super in on the Renfroe anyway. He kind of had a pretty terrible approach. He's pretty much just all power and like a cannon in the outfield. So if Franmil can continue to hit, obviously nothing like he did in AAA, but if he can hit for 250 and with like a 225 ISO or something like that, I think he'll be able to stick around and provide plenty of fantasy value. So I'm definitely looking at him. Alex Gordon, a little bit less intriguing numbers. He's got 3 home runs and a 275 average, just about as bland as it gets, but it does look like he is rebounding from just being a nobody last year. So any interest in Alex Gordon as a rebound?
Yeah, it was funny that you mentioned that, because I wasn't even paying attention to him until you mentioned it. And I guess I had reason to not pay attention to him, but I will give him credit again where it's due. It looks like his contact issues, whatever was plaguing him the last 2 years, it seems like that's in the rearview mirror or the rearview window. I don't know what the idiom is. But he's 34 now. So he's like turning the corner like right at the wrong time. I think he'll be like the most average outfielder you can imagine, like maybe will threaten 10 home runs, 10 steals, bat what he's batting right now, 275. He's perfectly average in that. You could do worse, but you could do a whole lot better.
I'm still not touching him in standard mixed leagues, but if you're in like a 15 team mixed league, then maybe nothing too exciting to see here. How about Jaime Barría?
Ah, an angel. He's been intriguing so far. He's pitching over his head, low BABIP, high strand rate. I think the whiff rate falls a little bit. He's kind of had everything breaking his way, but you know, he does a fairly good job of limiting base runners. He did that in the minors, so I could see him being fairly effective. I don't see him being much better than a high 3, low 4 ERA kind of guy, and his strikeouts don't get you very far. He's kind of looking like a Jake Junis a little bit. I don't really know if that's a fair comp or even a very accurate comp, but just kind of in terms of outcomes, that's kind of what he's reminding me of. So he'll threaten to be good in, you know, in shallower leagues. And I think you got to pay attention to him in anything deeper, you know, 12, 15 team leagues, you got to be paying attention to him.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and slap the streamer label on him. He's kind of a jag for me. But Jordan Lyles will round out our waiver wire segment this week. He carried a perfect game into the eighth inning in his last start with 10 strikeouts. So that's pretty hard to ignore. Are you buying into Jordan Lyles?
Well, I have to admit, I haven't really done my due diligence on him. I think it was Craig Edwards just wrote about him today. I did notice that he had a really good start prior to his his perfect game threat, and he hadn't done that in half a decade. So I think, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that he's put together two nice starts. I'm willing to pay attention. It seems like Craig saw that he's throwing his curveball a bit harder. It looks like he's spotting pitches a little bit better. So I don't really have a good answer to that, but I think you have to be paying attention after yesterday. Was that yesterday or was that 2 days ago? Jeez.
I think it was 2 days ago.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if he's a 25% strikeout guy. Maybe he's a 20% strikeout guy. And, you know, that's adequate. That'll get the job done in a lot of leagues. I just don't think he's not going to be like a Charlie Morton turn the corner kind of guy. But I think you shouldn't dismiss him too readily.
I'm totally in lockstep with everything you said there. I don't really have too terribly much to add. It's nice when you see guys who were sort of bounced to the bullpen, you know, put back into the rotation and sort of carry over what they fleshed out in the bullpen there. So I am definitely looking to pick up some Jordan Lyles, especially in deeper leagues, if nothing else, and stream him in shallower leagues. But that is going to wrap us up. Alex, thanks so much for joining us and sticking with us, even though we ran a little bit long today. But I mean, there's a ton of good stuff. This is definitely one of the best podcasts I think that we've put out this year. Very proud of it. And thank you so much for joining us. So be sure to let us know where everybody can find you on social media and plug anything and everything that you got coming out.
You can find me on Twitter at Dolph Haldhagen. You're better off just trying
to
guess.
Say it again.
Yeah, you're better off just trying to guess how to spell it, because I'm not going to spell it. I don't have anything coming up. I just kind of write when I write. I probably write like once a week. It's all at Rotograph. So you can catch me there. I'm trying to write less about pitchers because I've done that a little too often lately. So yeah, you know, when the inspiration strikes, I'll be there. But my brand is pretty weak. So I don't try to stick to anything too tenaciously, or else I'll be betraying my very weak principles. I really appreciate you guys having me on. I high praise that this was a good podcast, because I pretty much ruin everything I touch. So I'm glad this has turned out well.
No, you are awesome, man. So thanks so much. Van, Ron, great job sitting back and doing nothing there for the last 5 minutes. Well done.
MVP.
I went to get some cheese, so I'm all good.
Okay, perfect. All right, we're going to have a special mystery guest again next week. Until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.